Hi, everybody. Welcome to No Gods, No Mayors, the final episode of calendar 2025. The final mainline episode of calendar 2025.
Sure. This is coming out on Christmas Day.
Yeah. Wow. Shout out to anyone who is listening to this on Christmas Day.
I heard a mayor on podcast land on Christmas Day in the morning. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Honestly, the way that my family traditions around Christmas Day work, I would legitimately, if I were a listener to this show, be listening to it on Christmas Day.
Wow.
If you find yourself cousinless, we can be your cousin walk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
you
my
can,
God. Yeah.
You can get high and then we can sort of like tell you about a mayor. Or if you're sort of doing a gamer mode type thing, you're hiding from your family, you're waiting to hear, well, look who decided to, you know, show up or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Look who grungled in the door at this hour.
Yeah. from your all trans family, because you still steadfastly refuse to transition. You can hide from them with the podcast with three transsexual women.
That's right. I'm thinking about maybe, you know how like, so I was raised Jewish. Which I believe has never come up on the show. Traditionally we would, go to the movies, get some Chinese food. That is true. That is a true stereotype. Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking about maybe what religion do we want to assign the stereotype of listen to No Gods, No Mayors.
Ooh. Yeah. Weirdly, it lands on Georgians. Okay. Unexpected. Yeah. We placed our trust in the Mayor-taculous and in Tbilisi right now.
Uh-huh. Because are they going to say Georgians like the people who don't like landlords?
Yeah,
and they were going to say, well, they listen to No Gods, No Mayors because they cannot go to the movie theater because they know that money goes to the landlord.
Yeah,
being a Georgian Georgist with all that that implies.
I mean, I would be that just for the name alone. I would do that. I mean, I just love the internal slant rhyme.
But I hope if you're listening to this on Christmas, you're thinking about the Kashapuri you're going to have later. Mm-hmm. Second thing about Georgia,
you're writing a note to your family in the cool script that I like that I can't remember the name of.
You're enjoying a really, really good wine.
A very good wine. You've got the mother dumpling with the other dumplings inside of it, which I like.
Oh, and you know what your plans are tonight is you're going to Bassiani. You're going to the second best techno club in the world, which is located. It's in Tbilisi. It's located under the football stadium, and I think about going all the time.
It's under the football stadium.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Enrico Fermi's lab. Yeah.
It is
like a South American communist.
Like they put like
a third thing.
They put the techno, they put like the second best techno club in the world underneath like the Olympic football stadium in Tbilisi.
Riley, are you sure this isn't part of an elaborate plot to lure you into the basement beneath the stadium in Tbilisi?
I don't know.
Yeah. Perhaps they're trying to some sort of evil Georgian Enrico Fermi is trying to look.
I don't know about you.
His lair,
Enrico Fermashvili.
Let me just ask you though, like, how many? Like, if I get an Instagram ad for an amazing techno club that also serves great wine in a place that's sort of relatively cheap to fly to, why wouldn't I go? And how come? And I'm just so cool.
Imagine how good the wine is at the Georgian techno club.
I'm just so cool that no one else I know has even heard of it. So they're all going to be suckers when I'm partying in Bassiani. No. Look, it's No Gods, No Mayors. It's the last mainland episode of the year. You're listening on or after Christmas, not before, unless you're Sam. Hi, no. Sam.
Hi, Sam.
And also,
Merry Christmas, Sam.
Before we start the old municipal roundup, I also just wanted to say to my co-hosts and our listeners, and also Sam, thank you for such a wonderful year of doing this show, which has brought me a great deal of joy in the last sort of 16 months.
You're very welcome, Riley. And I too would like to thank the listeners and thank the Sam and thank both of you. Thank you.
I would like to thank the listeners and Sam and one of you. Mm-hmm. And then the other one.
Oh, thank goodness.
In that order.
Oh, my God. Oh. First the poncho thing, now this. Balls through the roof.
Riley, I'm hoping in the new year, I'm hoping in the new year you'll get the poncho.
Yeah, it's a time for personal growth. Uh-huh. You know? Mm-hmm.
It's a time to be warm.
Mm, uh-huh. That is very true. It is very true.
We both got our hands inside of it.
It's cold.
You both look very cozy.
I can't get to my mute button over here, so you're going to hear me chewing and coughing and drinking and things.
That's completely fine.
But look, for our final mainline mayor of the year, we're going to talk about Calgary's mayor Ralph Klein, one of the odder men of Canadian politics. But first,
Calvin Klein's brother.
Thank you very much. Can't wait to hear that another million times. We have
the brother
of the guy who designed every trans woman's underwear.
Yeah, that's right. But first, we have a little segment we like to call Municipal Roundup.
Oh, you didn't come up with a fun seasonal name for it?
Well, this is a mainline episode, so we're trying to, you know, you want to be accessible to the people who have not heard the show before. So the other thing we've been referencing is that Riley's a trans woman and he won't admit it.
No, he won't.
So, Item. I've got items for the class. I've got two. First, so we have historically the New York Minute is one of our segments on Municipal Roundup. I'd like to introduce the Bayou Breakdown.
All right, Sam, let's see what you can do with that.
Hey, I'm in New Orleans here.
Down in the item, just me and my mayor. There you go. How about that?
Pretty good.
From that show Treme with John Goodman.
Very good. So a couple episodes ago was Latoya Cantrell, and she is, as we talked about, she's outgoing. Right? Mm-hmm.
She's still mayor until the new year.
Yes. And so here's a little news story. New Orleans mayor orders removal of banners connected to the inauguration of Helena Moreno.
Oh my God. I love it.
The city of New Orleans has removed banners at Gallier Hall connected to the mayor-elect her inauguration events. Emails show the banners were removed at the request of Mayor Latoya Cantrell.
Go out spiteful to your last day in office.
So... Latoya, ever the petty bitch who lives for drama, we love and support. They asked her about this and she said, no, it was not me. It's not a big deal. It's a standard practice for us to bring down the banners. An email obtained by WDSU shows that Joe Threat, Cantrell's chief administrative officer, informing the staff that despite the intention to keep the banners up.
Sorry, that's not a Joe Threat. That's a William Promise. God damn it.
Anyways, I had to include that there's a man named Joe Threat as the chief administrative officer for Latoya Cantrell. I cannot believe we did not get to that in the episode, but it's true.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
The mayor's direction, she in the email said the mayor's direction is to remove the banners and reinstall them prior to Inauguration Day. Sure.
Incredible.
So yeah, they said it was like a budget thing, but it's so clear that she's just being petty and doesn't want the celebration to be celebrated before she's gone. And I respect that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one more. The New York Minute here, of course. This was sent in by a lot of people, but was brought to my attention by friend and wife of the show, my wife, Jaya, my friend and wife, Bill de Blasio and Arizona Mayor Roxana Valenzuela hooked up hours after meeting while he was dating Nomiki Kunst. This is a Page 6
Bill
article.
De Blasio, we gave you a pretty favorable review as far as episodes go.
And we talked about the South Tucson Mayor Roxana Valenzuela a couple episodes ago in a Municipal Roundup, but we did not mention that he was cheating on Nomiki Kunst with her. It recently came to light, the lefty politician, this is from Page 6, so you know it's really fucking juicy. It recently came to light the lefty pole began an affair with South Tucson mayor while he was still seeing his now ex-political strategist, Nomiki Kunst, who had been dating for nearly a year. Apparently, a source tells us that de Blasio and Valenzuela first met for a business lunch in September, more than a month before he split from Kunst, and the pair went back to his apartment to have sex.
What? Oh my God.
What was the conversational turn where it goes from we're sharing mayor knowledge to I need you? Right,
because I think he's just a sex guy now. I think he's like a Raya dude.
Oh, yeah, God.
So he's always doing it. Oh. I will not reveal my sources, but I know I have friends that have seen him on there.
Incredible.
I would love it if Bill de Blasio. I mean, look, now that it's all happening and like sort of the bad thing has happened, and now we're just in the world that we're in. I would love him to do like a kind of Justin Trudeau thing and like. Kind of start dating a celeb. Like maybe he could date Katy Perry, you know?
A source tells us that de Blasio came clean to her about the steamy dalliance while they were on vacation in Greece, just days after the saucy soup kitchen tryst. Oh yeah, there was just a couple of days after this happened, Valenzuela took him to volunteer at a soup kitchen. And again, I love Page 6. tins of split pea soup weren't the only cans His Honor got his hands on, says a source.
I love the news.
I'd love to be that source. Like, the moment you're called by Page Six, you're just like, I'm going to fire up every euphemism bone in my body.
Let's just say those tins of split pea soup weren't the only cans His Honor got his hands on.
That definitely is also like first idea, best idea, that one. But the other last thing, last observation as well is I like that, like, you can tell that this is an American paper, not just because we know it's an American paper, but because of how they refer to them having sex as a steamy dalliance rather than a sweaty romp. Because that's British true. Papers
only a sozzled plonker would call time on sozzled bonking.
Yeah, that's right.
That's true. Yeah. A sozzled plonker, indeed. So a source close to Konst tells us the pair attempted to get their relationship back on track, but in November, we're told that Konst learned he was still talking to Roxana, and she was coming to New York to see him while they were walking into Zoran Mamdani's election night party. So they got in a fight in front of the press at Zoran's victory party.
Oh, that's rough.
He told Page Six, I wish Nomiki well, and I'm sorry how our relationship ended. I fell in love with someone else. I'm now in a wonderful relationship with Roxana, and we will continue to nurture and keep private.
But that was absolutely not how it was reported at the time. How it was reported, I guess he was probably trying to fix his relationship, which is like, she just keeps calling me. So I guess it wasn't that she was in a one-sided relationship with Bill de Blasio. It was very much two-sided.
My favorite bit here is at the end, Page Six, starts taking weird shots and just goes, we hear Konst 41 has also moved on. A spy tells us they spotted the political commentator at the Hellenic Initiative Gala at Cipriani Wall Street this weekend, posing for pics with a hunky Staten Island firefighter named Keith Tavella.
Shout out to Keith Tavella, guy who's in this story for not much reason.
It seems like an upgrade, said a source of the New Man, who they noted seemed much younger.
Sorry, is this written by Donald Trump when he's in like bitchy mode?
And then, sorry, I just have to read the end of the article verbatim too, because it's just so strange. De Blasio's messy love life has made headlines since he and McCray, Shirlane, split. He was spotted making out at Empire Rooftop Bar with a mystery woman for 3 hours in September 2023.
For 3 hours?
And was seen a few months later.
Bill de Blasio was a lesbian.
Well, he's married to one for a long time. He was soon a few months later taking a married woman, Christy Stark, on a romantic stroll through Manhattan. Quote, I don't know anything about my wife holding hands with Bill de Blasio, that married woman's befuddled husband, Owen Stark, told the Post at the time.
Oh my God. The thing is, we gave a straight man lesbian polycule drama, and I think that's beautiful. I look forward to Bill de Blasio doing the sort of like first date that lasts 4 days thing.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of doing that with Valenzuela. If he broke up with Nomiki Konst on the 4th and now he's like, I'm in love,
he's gonna move to South Tucson and then still keep going to his gym in Brooklyn.
I want to pivot the whole podcast to be a kind of mayoral Page Six. And I really hope that you take my items in that spirit as well.
Please.
So, continuing New York Minute, I have one last Eric Adams update while he's still mayor. He's mayor for like a week.
Oh, yeah. This is our... Oh, no. The next episode is our last episode with Eric Adams as mayor, which is
I'm gonna miss
truly
him.
Sad. Yeah.
So, one of the things that happened amidst all of the indictments that sort of went beyond a lot of people's notice, not mine, is that his rat czar quit. His rat czar fled the sinking ship.
Classic.
And this was one of his big, like, sort of flagship policies, is we're going to have a rat czar. Well, his rat czar isn't czar anymore. We had a kind of October Revolution.
Yeah, a sort of a not helped by the rat czar's own Ratsputin.
No, this is true. I think I remember a Don Bluth movie about this. However, in his last week in office, Eric Adams has finally gotten his wish. You might not have a rat czar anymore, but it's not about the woman, it's about the institutions. And as such, we have a press release from the Office of the Mayor that by executive order, he has established the Rat Patrol, the Rat Shaker, the Office of Rodent Mitigation.
Oh, he's got the fucking rat A-team. This is great.
He does. He does. I hope Zoran keeps this. I hope that very dearly. And in the press release, it says that the Office of Rodent Mitigation is going to streamline coordination across city government, community organizations, and the private sector to continue Mayor Adams' War on Rats. This is a stay-behind movement in the War on Rats.
We've left caches of cats up and down the city that are being guarded by the mafia and the Catholic Church.
Someone ran on that, if you remember. The new mayoral office builds on the Adams administration's commitment to... the new mayoral office builds on the Adams administration's unprecedented focus on rodent mitigation. And then they hype the Rat Czar, and they also hype my favorite named Adams program, which is DSNY, putting sort of trash in bins. That was known as the Trash Revolution.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, baby.
Oh no, I was just one last Eric item is they buried a time capsule the other day, which is an Eric Adams like administration time capsule, which is outside of City Hall, which is to be dug up in 10 years.
FBI.
And like,
you shouldn't be able to dig up your own time capsule. That's just a box in your basement.
And one of the things they put in the time capsule is a toy bin to represent the trash revolution.
That's cute. I mean, my favorite Eric Adams tweet is still, it was a quote tweet of two rats fighting on a subway platform. And he said, I hope they both lose, and they will, thanks to our trash revolution. So I love the guy for this. And he does say, in what may be one of his final statements as mayor, New Yorkers know there is nothing I dislike more than rats. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you, Eric.
New York Minutes.
Thank you, Eric. Oh my God. New York Minutes not going to be the same with him gone.
It's going to be like, Zoran,
oh,
like shot.
Zoran went to basement or something. Cool.
Yeah, Zoran shot and killed one of my political enemies.
However,
I heard the blindfold fell off, which is so embarrassing.
I do have to inaugurate another subsegment, which I think is going to be getting a lot of use, that I'd like to call Bayport, Minnesota Minute.
All right. Sam, Bayport, those are Bayport music, please.
So
what's famous from Bayport, Minnesota? Let's find out.
The mayor in a minute, because...
Wait, I have it. They're 1 mile south of a place called Stillwater, so we could play the song Fever Dog from Almost Famous by the fictional band Stillwater.
It's true. It is true.
Perfect.
I'm gonna read you this headline, then I'm gonna sort of give you the tie-in here. Not the headline, I'm just gonna read you the whole story, and then you will understand why. Mm-hmm. So, Benjamin Carl Hansen, 57, of Bayport, was arrested on Wednesday on charges of hiding a corpse and felony theft in connection with a crime, which was discovered in October 2002, when Boy Scouts found a skull in Somerset Township, Wisconsin.
Oh my God,
bones,
how's the mayor?
Ass opening. Bones is, opening.
Bones, how's the mayor factor into all this?
It is quite literally an episode of Bones.
Real life Bones! Okay, I have a new theme song for this. It's the theme song from Bones by the Crystal Method.
Uh-huh. Authorities say Hansen worked as a funeral director for Simone Funeral Home in Oak Park Heights in the early 2000s. In August, DNA and genetic testing confirmed that the skull belonged to Alice C. Peterson, 92, of Stillwater, who died of natural causes in 2001. She was reportedly cremated and relatives were given her ashes, but... On October 19th, 2002, a group of Boy Scouts hiking in a ravine near the Fred C. Anderson Boy Scout camp stumbled upon a black garbage bag that contained human remains and called the St. Croix County Sheriff's Office.
Okay, so now this is where we put the Bones theme song, because that's in an episode of Bones where the theme song would go. Thank you.
DNA tests of the skull failed to identify the person, but nearly two decades later, in February 2021, the case was brought to the DNA Doe Project, a volunteer nonprofit, who identified it. According to the criminal complaint, Hansen was the only employee at the funeral home who had access to Peterson's body, that he was hospitalized in 2001 for mental health reasons. Another employee said Hansen went off the deep end at the summer of 2001 and was described as moody and irate.
Because of the
skull stealing, the bone stealing.
Is he a Norman Bates? Is he talking to the skull?
I don't know. Employee.
I just want to say. Uh-huh. I don't think it's that crazy. If I had a human skull in my house, I would be talking to it all the time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and you would be moody and irate.
It's a human skull. I'm not going to not talk to it.
I don't want to be rude. I don't
wanna... The employee hired to replace Hansen said Hansen attempted to swerve at her in the parking lot with his vehicle in 2003. Funeral home officials attempted to file a restraining order against him, but that was denied, the complaint states. Okay, so your timeline here is this woman gets cremated, this guy allegedly steals her skull, disposes of her skull, they find the skull, and then this year, or like 2021 rather, they identify the skull, and now this is all getting charged. How is this a no gods, no mayors item? Yeah. Well, his wife, mayor of Bayport, and... This isn't just a, you know, sort of mayor's husband in skull controversy. No. In an email to the Pioneer Press, Mayor Michelle Hansen said, "This allegedly occurred more than 2 decades ago. I support my husband and I'm confident we'll get through this with the love and support of our family and friends. She is standing by her allegedly skull-stealing man."
Stand by your man.
Oh, yeah, they're doing a press conference where she's like wearing the Jackie Kennedy outfit.
They politically assassinated my husband merely for allegedly stealing a woman's skull.
It was an already dead woman that he stole the skull of?
Yes, yeah,
But then disposed of it.
Is it a crime?
It is a crime to do that, yeah. She died of natural causes.
I threw it away. Okay.
Yeah, he threw it away later.
Yeah, I just had it for a couple of days. Yeah, I wanted to practice. I was in a local community theater production of Hamlet. I needed it. I wanted some verisimilitude for that bad boy. Mm-hmm. So I stole a skull.
Yeah. You think that your mayor is embattled? I don't think there's been a mayor as embattled as the mayor whose husband is currently awaiting trial for skull theft.
Yeah, awaiting trial for the, I would say, least obviously beneficial to the criminal crime ever committed. A skull that you take for a bit.
Yeah, but maybe he just wanted to like see what it was like to have a skull. And then he decided he didn't like it and he put the skull in, I guess, a Boy Scout camp ravine. Uh-huh. One of the classic skull disposal locations.
Uh-huh.
And now you can't do anything anymore.
Yeah, because of woke.
Because of woke.
Because of woke.
That's my item.
That's a good item. I love that item.
I think Bayport, Minnesota Minute is off to such a strong start. I cannot wait for what it's going to be next week.
Mm. I think we're going to have to keep an eye on how the sort of trial goes.
We'll keep an eye on the skull because the skull doesn't have one anymore to do it itself.
That's true.
That's going to be up with Weddle. I mean, I know that...
that's also the podcast's motto, up with Weddle.
Up with Weddle. By the way, I know that I didn't put this in the items and I have my own mayor to get to, but also
I have another one if you want me to pad. I have a finished one.
I don't actually even want to pad. I just want to tell you about Randall Weddle because there's been some updates in Randall Weddle, which is that you wouldn't believe it, but okay, a couple of things. Number one, all the city council meetings in London, Kentucky have been chaotic since then.
No, what? Yeah,
someone pulled a fire alarm at one.
Oh, good.
Uh-huh.
Well, I mean, you think that's bad. At least nobody's stealing anyone's skull.
Well, not that we know of. So the London mayor cancels special council meeting over space concerns, comma, turmoil erupts. This is from WKYT.
Why can nothing normal happen there? And give us the Weddle stinger, because this is beautiful.
Yeah.
And we need to discuss it, I think.
Uh-huh. Mayor Randall Weddle canceled a special London City Council meeting Wednesday over concerns about violating state open meetings laws due to overcrowding, sparking a heated confrontation in the chamber. Too many people are too into it. Clearly, we have fired up everybody, and they're all going to London, Kentucky.
Amazing.
Something is happening in London, Kentucky, cannot explain it.
In the opinion of the city attorney, we are beyond capacity for the chamber. We're required to give adequate seating. And so the meeting had to be canceled. Councilman Judd Weaver challenged the mayor's decision. "I appeal your decision. The meeting is not in session, so you have no power right now." The dispute escalated when the mayor and the council members began shouting at one another. Weaver said, "You're a liar. You've spun this around." With the mayor responding, "You're a liar, Judd. That's why no one voted for you."
Incredible. God. I I have one more little item, a small
may,
item.
May I do one small, a little addendum to the London, London, London talk?
Addend your item, sir.
So, London, Kentucky mayor, this is from 2 days ago.
Do you addend your item at me,
London,
sir?
London, Kentucky mayor says he'll be forced to fire the entire fire department in 2026.
Yes!
Tony Wu thought in accent. It says, a newly passed ordinance puts 51 city employee positions in jeopardy, where it implements a new pay scale based on years of experience and restructures departments. Judd Weaver, Randall Weddle's enemy, said, I'm doing this because I'm trying to save the ones that have been here, that have worked all these years, and not be replaced by people that Mayor Weddle wants to replace them with. Now that's what's going on. So basically, Weddle is saying, if Judd Weaver like succeeds in like increasing pay for long tenured city employees, he's going to have to fire the entire fire department. That's why they're called the fire department. I love London, Kentucky. I love it so much. Nova, you have one more item.
Beautiful city. I do. So,
it's a long pause.
It's I'm definitely not trying to look up how to pronounce this guy's name.
Well, while you're doing
I have something very brief. No, my finished dessert.
No, okay. No, it's very brief. Friend of the show, Noah, Suarez Sykes just texted me. Curtis Sliwa stopped by New York City Reporters holiday party last night and is singing into a microphone, The Chainsmokers' Don't Let Me Down, apparently a cappella.
Magnificent.
Nothing, no comment, just... Mm-hmm.
Just he's doing it. He's doing it. Fantastic. That's all we need. My finish amuse-bouche. It is in reference to SNA de Nerodio. So if you recall the previous Finnish mayor stuff I talked about, well,
yes.
I have another listener has written in to say, re-Finnish mayor stuff, part for Arhinmäki, the Left Alliance deputy mayor for Helsinki you mentioned in the previous No Gods No Mayors, who was arrested for doing graffiti, has just been performing in the mayor's Christmas party, rapping two songs in Finnish while dressed as a baboon masked singer style. He also arranged break dancers to perform to Bomb Funk MC's Freestyler. All of this took place inside the very fancy Helsinki City Hall. You can find evidence on his Instagram account at Padva Arhinmäki. For my part as a Finn and a Helsinkian, I think this is fucking incredible, and I would lay down my life for him.
Also, can I just ask you a quick question? Where do you think that the Bomb Funk MCs are from? What country are they from?
Oh, probably Georgia.
They're Finnish. It's a Finnish rap group.
There's an interview with him in The Guardian about where he's actually very thoughtful about the graffiti and talks about like broken windows theory. And because this guy, I get the sense, is kind of a hipster, the words I painted are really a reference to the early New York graffiti of the 70s. And he painted, it actually looks really good. He painted GCM, which stands for Great Career Moves.
By the way, I think we should have Bomb Funk MC's Freestyler as the outro music for this episode.
Yeah.
I've just shared it in the chat. Okay. Can I talk about Klein?
I'm just going to listen to it real quick.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I'm going to listen to the Chainsmokers one.
Yeah. Sam, play both those at once, please.
Oh my God. Oh yeah.
Okay.
I'm liking Bomb Funk.
Do we have a mayoral crush? Do we have a new favorite mayor in the form of Padva Arhinmäki?
I think maybe maybe if we're going to speak about this mayor again, we should maybe have some like romantic music. Mm. maybe some Cupid, like a Cupid loop.
Every tab I open about this guy is like being hit in the head with a hammer, because in the personal life section of his Wikipedia page, it says Arhinmäki is a publicly and active supporter of two Helsinki-based football clubs and has been a part of the ultra supporter group 116% Boys.
That was Alexander's group of guys who were lovers, right? The Sacred Band of Helsinki.
116%.
Okay. I want to talk Klein. We got to go to Calgary.
Okay.
The plane.
It's Calvin Klein's brother, which is why it's in Calgary.
The plane's taken.
It's in Calgary, Alberta.
God damn it. The plane's taken off from Helsinki. It's a direct flight to Calgary. It's a very popular route. And we're landing.
All right. That was Item Rodeo. Yeehaw. Oh,
what an Item Yeehaw. Rodeo. That was.
Now let's head to the actual rodeo.
We're going to the Stampede.
Make Padra Arhinmäki listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
We think he rules.
We're actually 0% boys over here, though, is the problem.
Yeah. I want to start by reading from Ralph Klein's 2013 obituary. It's from the Globe and Mail.
Yeah. From when he invented that bottle.
I was wondering when we get to that. From when he invented slang for throwing up.
From when he invented that international blue.
So, folksy, colorful, and outspoken, Mr. Klein's reputation stretched beyond provincial and even national boundaries. When he became premier in 1992, Alberta had the highest deficit per capita in the country. During his tenure, he led four successive majority government, and he wiped out the deficit and the debt entirely. He accomplished this by persuading voters to accept massive cuts to public services. Call it the Klein Revolution, Ralphonomics, or the Alberta Advantage, as Mr. Klein dubbed his austerity campaign, the man that everyone knew as King Ralph proved he could cut. Late in his tenure, Mr. Klein also learned to spend, issuing a $400 prosperity check dubbed Ralph Bucks to Albertans in 2006. But Klein's greatest achievement, it was said, was working with Liberal PM Jean Chrétien to really kickstart development of the Canadian oil sands into what they are today.
Okay.
Stephen Harper said, Alberta and Canada have lost a unique and significant leader. While Ralph's beliefs about the role of government and fiscal responsibility were once considered radical, his greatest legacy is that these ideas are now widely embraced across the political spectrum.
It's Ralph World.
He had an uncanny ability to convince voters to accept smaller, meaner government and to forgive him when he blundered. His frequent stumbles, usually fueled by alcohol, were followed by tearful apologies rather than denials and stonewalling.
Are we embarking on a sort of cowboy Rob Ford?
We are embarking on a cowboy-ish, Rob-ish, Ford-ish, who has many differences.
Mournful cowboy Rob Ford.
Who also turned Alberta into like a blasted moon hellscape.
Yeah.
Cool.
And also, because we said we were going to do Ralph Klein in the last episode, someone someone basically tweeted at us on Blue Sky, or posted us on Blue Sky. So this is thank you to Justin. I met Ralph when I was 8 years old. He drunkenly belched in my face, shoved $10 in my pocket, and told me to invest in oil. Can't wait to hear about my hometown hero.
My God.
It's good advice.
Yeah, that's right. We are talking
about insider trading. He was bribing 8-year-olds.
We are talking about the sobbing, self-pitying Alki, who parlayed being a loudmouth on television into being Calgary's mayor, Alberta's premier, and the architect of the system subsequent premiers had used to flirt closer and closer to creating the conditions for the convoy politics. And he's got a weirdly complicated legacy. Ralph Klein, let's fucking go.
Incredible. Why does every Canadian we cover start as like just a loud guy on TV or the radio or something?
That's the only place where Canadians who want the attention of other people are allowed to express that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
They didn't have podcasts yet.
Yeah. Otherwise, if you're not a loudmouth on TV, it's the thing is like Canada is a country that has a few very loud oafs that rule over the rest of the people who are like, oops, sorry. And Ralph Klein is the oaf. He was an oaf before Rob Ford was an oaf, right? Rob Ford learned to oaf from Ralph Klein.
Incredible.
Klein was born in Calgary in 1942. His father, Phil, was a genuine boxcar-style railroad riding hobo. And his mother, Florence, was a diner waitress. At this time, before the oil strike...
Did those lifestyles conflict?
He's half hobo on his father's side, yeah.
Well, he's culturally hobo.
The diner was a rail car also. She was there.
Yeah, he leapt into her diner car.
And the thing is, right, before they struck oil in the 1950s, Alberta was comparatively like radical, like a lot of elements of single payer healthcare were kind of come up with there. The Social Credit Party was very popular, which you've not heard of the Social Credit Movement. It's a kind of monetary Georgism, which still emphasizes its one weird trick.
Huh.
But Alberta has always hated the rest of Canada, especially Ontario, Quebec, and the Maritimes. Like they fucking hate the East.
Yeah, I heard that one Stan Rogers song.
Yeah, that's right.
I know the two things is they hate the other provinces and they hate rats. Hate them. Yeah. They're the rat wall. It's them, right?
Yeah. Eric Adams should be given some kind of like ambassadorship to Alberta specifically.
Oh, he'd have fun with the cowboy hats and stuff as well.
But yeah, I think Alberta has no rats, is what I know of Alberta. None.
So the other thing is that. When like at the beginning, Alberta wasn't a province. The people who lived there, and I don't mean like indigenous people who were forced off their land. I mean, even like white settlers had comparatively few rights. They had very few rights over natural resources. They were under direct federal control, which more or less was like, no, we're maximally extractive from here to where we are. And so politics in Alberta has always been about fuck you, Ottawa, or fuck you, Toronto, fuck you, the rest of the country. Always. Just in different directions. So anyway.
I feel like there was like some of the upper Midwest in America that was like this too, that like kind of lost it. Like, I feel like there was like a socialist movement in Dakotas for a while.
Yeah.
Because it was the same, a similar sort of like, we are a territory. We don't have any autonomy.
Yeah. It was sort of all to play for, and only in the sort of, only kind of in the 20th, in the latter half of the 20th century, really, did it become like, no, this is where fucking like ultra culture war lives. Especially with Pierre Elliott Trudeau and starting the new, this new national energy plan. But that's for another episode. So anyway, his father, Phil, settled into a career in pro wrestling, wrestling in the Calgary Stampede League as Phil the Killer Klein, which then enabled
wrestling
him.
Wrestling hobo Phil the Killer Klein?
Correct, yes. Enabled him to find success in property development, and he owned a paving company, so he was a landlord.
If you were John Hodgman, that's the funniest combination of words you will ever hear in your life.
Yeah, John Hodgman, that you can use that. That's for you.
Yeah, fucking shots fired at a guy who's way more successful at podcasting than I will ever be.
And seems like a perfectly nice man.
Klein dropped out of high school. He joined the Air Cadets. Then he finished high school. He studied business at vocational school.
Sorry, what? He dropped out of high school to join the Air Cadets, like running away from home to join the circus?
This just happened at the same time. But he studied business and he did so well at his vocational school.
I don't need a high school diploma because I'm going to the sky.
I go to sky school, actually.
The Air Force shall raise me as their own.
I'm going to be like the Mowgli of the F-16.
You would have been
the Mowgli of the Avro Arrow if they hadn't fucked that up.
That actually would have been better. He like studied business at vocational school, did so well that he came back next year to teach the class, and then they made him like principal of the school, which he did for a bit before leaving. Yeah, it's crazy.
You've learned everything there is to know about business.
As far as we're
concerned. Do you want to be our business teacher and then our principal?
Yeah, that's actually what happened.
Canada is not real.
No, absolutely not. Canada's a fake place.
Alberta in particular is an extremely fake place. Like, I feel like you could push over this vocational school because it's a set.
Oh, yeah. Of course. On a strong wind, all those skyscrapers in Calgary just tip over. It's all forced perspective. None of them are even taller than about 10 meters.
Yeah, there's not actually an arena shaped like a big horse saddle. Are you stupid? Yeah. Like, there's no way.
It's just like one of those It's one of those gullibility tests. Like, if your hand is bigger than your face, you have cancer.
Yeah, you still believe in Alberta? Because at 10, it's marginal, right?
So Ralph worked in public relations. And what he liked about public relations most was getting absolutely shit-faced with journalists, with the Globe and Mail saying his carousing had a sour effect on his marriage, but it did the opposite for his career.
Imagine trying to explain your PR job to your hobo wrestler father.
A real job involves a bindle and an arm bar.
You can do so many joint locks with a bindle.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, you could really use the bindle to clothesline someone pretty effectively.
A bindle in sort of wrestling argo, a foreign object par excellence.
It's actually called a clothesline because you used to have to do it with a bindle.
See, I'm now just thinking of that clip of like the guys doing the dangerous maintenance on the oil well covered in mud. And it's like, do you treat these men with like respect or contempt, but it's a hobo wrestler doing
Do you think he's wearing like sort of hobo clothes and then like a sort of leotard, or what are we thinking the move is here?
Like a leotard that looks like a barrel, like a really fitted barrel.
Really slim barrel.
These terrible splinters, but it plays so well.
Yeah.
So.
the railroad cops can't stop him because he keeps putting them in headlocks.
This is just the joke from The Simpsons where Homer keeps boxing guys named like Boxcar Joe.
Every single railway bull has been put into a full Nelson by Phil the Killer Klein.
He's the only guy playing like songs on the banjo about beating up the bulls and not running away from them. Why not establish the Big Rock Candy Mountain at home?
Yeah. You know, it's look, we need, if all the hobos unionize and beat the bulls, then we'll own the railway.
Existing Big Rock Candy Mountain.
So by the late 1960s, Klein joined the radio CFCN and transferred to television shortly thereafter, where he started as a weatherman because he could write backwards on glass.
Just being like, so how many railroad bulls have you wrestled lately? Dad, I'm a weatherman.
Yeah. Oh, that's not going to help you. That's not going to help you when the dog comes charging at you. You got to put it in a fucking pile driver.
Trying to explain it to my dad, like, it's actually useful to know the weather so it's easier to jump on and off of trains. If I know if it's going to be raining or not.
So he became a political reporter who is famous for treating everyone he worked with utter contempt, famously saying there are no stories in the newsroom and largely just not showing up to work most days.
He was Robert Downey Jr. in Zodiac.
Yeah, completely. Like he would then like just not turn up to work for 5 days and then show up with like a huge story 5 days later and then just walk out again. Like he was good at this. Now, he spent most of his time at different bars, especially one called the Hotel St. Louis, which remained the center of his journalistic and political life. It was the center also of like the most blasted, decayed area of the city. We'd hang out with working people, sex workers, cops, city workers, basically anybody who would sit down with him. Like, I need you to imagine the most rumpled brown suit you can possibly picture, and that the loosest tie, and that was him hunched over a bar, like wreathed in smoke on his ninth whiskey, and it's 11 in the morning.
Yeah, New Hollywood. Incredible. He's going New Hollywood mode on it. Yeah, I understand. Absolutely. Him. Yeah, sure.
This is another long section of his obituary that describes some work that he did that was kind of made him almost nationally famous. Among the best stories he found on the road was a documentary he made in 1977 on the Siksika Reserve. Prince Charles was in Alberta to commemorate the centenary of some horrible treaty. Mr. Klein's assignment was to investigate the conditions on the Siksika Reserve and find out how the Blackfoot felt they'd fared under the treaty. In a wide-ranging research trip, he studied the rituals and traditions of the Blackfoot and participated in sweat lodge ceremonies.
Do not let a man who drinks that much into your sweat lodge. There's like a bottle of whiskey coming out of him every 10 minutes.
So he returned with a camera crew and filmed an angry documentary in which he confronted authorities about housing conditions and demanded to know why, for example, grocery stores had bulk supplies of vanilla extract on the shelves when they were selling it at huge markups to obvious alcoholics. The reaction was immediate after the show had aired. Outrage from viewers and appreciation from the Siksika, who gave him the name White Rider and then became his ride or die political supporters.
Huh.
This is the only white person in Canada who has ever given a fuck about any First Nations person until like 1990.
100%. So as the years passed, he visited sweat lodges on the eve of every election campaign, carried an eagle feather in his briefcase, and hung braids of sweet grass in his offices. But the First Nations didn't forget him either. He was the second white person adopted into the Siksika Blackfoot Nation in 1993 when he was premier and was made an honorary chief in 1996. Like, pictures of Ralph Klein like wearing native headdress. And it's like, that's actually fine for him to do that.
Yeah, like not racistly in the sense that it's like something they've awarded him.
Yeah,
this is Neil Gorsuch thought, where it's like you're an absolute maniac on every front, but then for some reason you are incredibly correct about this one thing.
Yeah, 100%. This is exactly Ralph Klein. He's an utter lunatic, personally abusive, like to people around him, like horrifying alcoholic. You know, just austerity mad, but on this one thing, he is as right as is possible to be for now, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
He's sort of more of a local Calgarian Hunter S. Thompson. His other major stories, for example, involve like fully embedding with like the Grim Reapers Motorcycle Club, who were later patched over to the Hells Angels. And he, guess what? He did this because he liked to drink with them in their bars. Like, basically, he would just go... With some exceptions, like with the Siksika, that's an exception, but he would mostly go where the alcohol was and just write about who was getting drunk in the daytime. He was largely concerned with telling the stories of people he felt society cast out, so he didn't really see much of a difference between them. The Hells Angels were the same as a sex worker, it was the same as someone who's getting evicted, it was the same as a mistreated First Nations tribe, because it was all just people who were being... like outcast,
just kind of waging like an alcohol fueled intellectual insurgency on Canadian society, which I approve of 100%. To be clear,
this is 100% how to think of Ralph Klein. But yeah, one of his favorite things to do was like to make documentaries where he would like take a homeless person and then like check them into a swanky hotel and pay for them to have a like a golf game and then film the shocked reactions of like the blue bloods. Oh,
that's like classic, like sort of agitprop shit. This guy's like sort of Canadian Michael Moore at this point.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, completely. And he does so many of these, like, we've put a homeless person in this situation, we've put a homeless person in this situation things. See, because also like the Canadian upper crust is so blue-blooded and persnickety that like they genuinely do react with like horror you would expect from a stereotypical like English lord from the 18th century.
Okay.
So this is from King Ralph, The Political Life and Success of Ralph Klein by Don Martin, by an authorized biography of him.
Don Martin, the Mad Magazine illustrator?
I don't.
Probably not.
Probably not the same guy.
Got that. Uh-huh.
Second string to his bow. You know?
So when he discovered that the media were barred from a glittery oil patch fundraising dinner for Alberta Premier Peter Lougheed in the late 1970s, a peeved Klein took his camera a few blocks down the street to interview homeless Calgarians eating at a soup kitchen, splicing their hard luck stories into coverage of the exclusive $300 a plate dinner. Complaining Calgary Tories burned up the lines to the sort of TV station executives in minutes of it airing. So they were like, how dare you contrast?
That actually rocks.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's like he's doing the most ham-fisted kind of like poorly judged Michael Moore stuff, but it is 100% working.
Yeah. This guy sort of sidles up to you at like 11 in the morning and in absolute sincerity exhales sort of this vapor of like grain alcohol and then goes, society. And you know what? He's right.
He's right.
Here's the thing. Society.
Society, well, though. For real.
It's fucked up.
It's because Canadian blue bloods, they're like dodos. They're not used to being like poked in any way.
Yeah. Like, actually, the newest scholarship says that dodos actually were quite fast and strong.
Okay. Well, so it's now genuinely emotionally I missed a day of estrogen, so I'm very emotional. It's really important to me that his like hobo wrestler dad was proud of him.
See, I haven't done my shot yet today. I'm doing it after this. So I'm actually, I don't really care about what his dad thinks.
It's like important to me that his dad saw that he was like fighting the power in the same way that he was fighting railroad cops.
Yeah. Like it's one fight between Phil the Killer Klein and Ralph Klein. One struggle.
Yeah. One struggle. All of us or none.
Yeah. So how does this guy?
Yeah, they're actually called the Wobblies because they're always getting thrown out of trains and they're, they're kind of like in shock from being like thrown off a moving train. And then also drunk.
How does this guy run for mayor, right? Because he's just like a journalist. So in 1980, he's working on this story about how the current mayor, Ross Alger, is trying to tear down a whole bunch of historic buildings and businesses to make way for a big new civic center, which would ultimately house Calgary city government. And it's going to be like huge.
Yeah. I mean, you could have any number of objections. You can be like, why does it have to be shaped like a saddle? why is it going to contain the cowboy hat World Hall of Fame?
Yeah, why are the doors wide enough for longhorn bulls to go in and out of each room? Yeah,
but instead this guy is like, I have put a camera in the face of every Hell's Angel in like a 50-mile radius.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fucked up that you're doing this.
So the official story, right, is that what happens is Ralph Klein happens upon the Ross Alger administration basically trying to manufacture consent for demolishing five city blocks by hiring a PR firm to go around filming homeless people, trying to make the area seem down at heel and therefore worth demolishing. And Ralph Klein's like, hey, that's what I do. That's my thing.
Yeah. I'm the guy who films homeless people.
Yeah. So, but on the also, this is again from Don Martin's biography, some of the businesses set to swallow the wrecking ball were some of his favorite bars.
They were going to attack everything this man held dear.
They were just at bars, the places where he could hang out with homeless people. So after he spotted an elaborate build model of the new civic center in the mayor's office, showcasing giant structures surrounded by reflecting pools, where the hotels, pawn shops, used furniture stores, and pubs then stood, Klein turned to advocacy journalism.
My pawn shops.
And made a whole like documentary with the civic center debacle called Dreams, Schemes, and Sandstone Dust, and then announced he was running for mayor. So this is in 1980, just 58 days before the vote, his resolve was fortified, this is from Martin, by his gaggle of drinking buddies in the St. Louis Tavern. He left the tavern, took a taxi home, woke up his wife Colleen, and giddily shared his grand plan to take over City Hall. She went back to bed.
I am amazed he didn't drive home. Yeah. That's my first doubt about this guy.
Shocking that he took a cab was also my only thought.
So The other thing is he went around, he went to work the next day and said, I'm not going to work here anymore. I'm going to run for mayor, before being basically laughed at by everyone because he was a drunk and just made stuff up all the time.
He was drunk when he said that. Yes, yeah. Of course.
And he was running against like the two squeaky clean destined to win candidates. It was like a lawyer versus an accountant. One of whom was like center right. One of whom was center left, both running with like over $100,000 of campaign money.
You see the contours of this already, yep. You know, yep. Like I'm going to put the system in a sort of bindle headlock.
Yeah. I was going to say center left versus center right. What that actually leaves is a huge gaping hole for a center candidate.
Ralph Klein was the same. He kind of was the center weirdly.
It leaves a gap for the kind of Z-axis candidate, you know?
Oh, it leaves a gap for the kind of Z to Y to X wobbling back and forth swaying candidate. So, but a few oil men, one named Rich Jones, basically saw maybe this could be their guy. Still, he campaigned on a shoestring of $22,000 and he didn't do super well in the beginning. But he said he had this philosophy they never strayed from, which is, even if I can't solve your problems, I'll give you a forum and I will listen. That's his like gut philosophy. But his campaign was like his drinking buddies and small business tyrant to one or two oil guys. It was super haphazard. Enter Rod Love.
Excuse me? Like from Boogie Nights?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and enter Dirk Diggler.
A guy named Rod Love sounds like he's entering me, but go on. Yeah.
Enter Dirk Diggler. Dirk Diggler was a waiter. He was a very good one, and he worked at a place called
Party... Dirk Diggler was a waiter. Yeah. Until he got discovered.
Rod Love was also a waiter. He was a very good waiter, and he worked at a place called Pardon My Garden.
Raising hand?
No, Canadian raising restaurants hand? Always have fucked up names.
Hey, what the fuck is Pardon My Garden?
Hey, do you want to go to Pardon My Garden tonight?
Hey, Pardon My Garden tonight, Queen?
I'm not really feeling... Do you feel like Pardon My Garden?
It sounds much better. It sounds so much nicer in your accent, Nova. Mm-hmm. You're saying, but then when a Canadian would say it, it's like, pardon my garden.
Pardon my garden? You have to do it in an Alberta accent as well.
What's an Albertan accent, Riley? Can you approximate one for us, please?
Don't know.
You actually don't know?
I don't know.
It's like a... Okay.
So this is from the Calgary Herald. Anyone remember the fern bar look of Pardon My Garden?
Yes.
I'm trying to find a little... There's like so many Facebook pages that are just like, remember Pardon My Garden on 4th Avenue Southwest. Anyone on my feed old enough to remember Pardon My Garden?
Hey, for $19 American, you can buy a matchbook from them on eBay.
This fabulous place oozes Parisian design. I mean, it looks very nice, actually.
Okay.
God, I wish we still had Pardon My Garden. That would have been so cool.
Oh, it does. It does look kind of nice.
Society was a lot better when Pardon My Garden was around.
It looks like it's in a kind of like overgrown mall food court setting.
Yeah. They did steaks and crepes.
So same time. Stupid.
All right. Look, so Rod Love worked at Pardon My Garden, which was like a popular upscale restaurant.
Riley, where did he work?
Pardon My Garden.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And he was beloved by none other than the current mayor, Ross Alger, as a waiter. Like, he'd be like, we want love. Give us love as the table. We won't take anyone else.
Okay, I accept that a mayor has to sort of maybe eat out a lot and that Calgary, you know, maybe only has a couple of restaurants. But, like, to have a sort of parasocial relationship with your waiter is interesting to me.
Yeah, so, but this is how Rod Love was known to, like, the Alger camp. It was how he was known to, like, everybody in politics is like he was known to be a good waiter at like this cool place people went for steaks and crepes. Mm. Canada's so fucking stupid, I swear to God. But he kept saying, hey, put me in. I'd be an amazing campaign strategist. And Alger laughed at him. He said, okay, you can stuff envelopes maybe, but stick to tables. So what Love does, after applying to the work for the other guy, and he's like, fuck off, says the same thing. He goes to work for Ralph Klein, who's like, you know what? Fuck it. Fine, you can be my campaign manager. And it turns out, it turns out that Rod Love is fucking amazing at being a campaign manager.
Like, out of spite, because two guys tell him like, stick to serving me crepes and steaks.
Yeah. He's wasted at Pardon My Garden.
And he knew it. He had a talent. He had a gift.
It was like, this is one of like life's most incredible called shots where Rod Love was like, I know that I am an amazing Alberta political campaign manager. And he was fucking right. Yeah, he whips everybody into shape and he's the political number two for Ralph Klein for the rest of his entire career through being premier of Alberta, everything. Klein then starts talking about things like civic pride, how like that people should like Calgary should be an exciting place. And he's being affable, more glad-handing, and it works. He shoots up in popularity. He wins 47% of the vote in a three-way split, which is unheard of for someone who had like just came in towards the end of the race without any kind of machinery behind him.
I think we have to give this one to Rod Love.
Yeah, 100%. This is pure love right here. This is vintage love.
it's all love.
And then now this bewildered oaf is mayor.
What in what year is this now?
80.
What, 80.
So. Klein largely inherits Ross Aldra's project, which are including bringing the Olympics to Calgary. Though Klein won the bid, much of the groundwork's laid by Aldra, building a light rail system.
Just like the two drunkest men in the world roll up on the IOC, which is unprepared for Albertan drinking.
Mm. The IOC fucking hated Ralph Klein.
Yeah, of course they do. It's all like fucking former Sturmbannführers at this point, like who all like have a sort of glass of Gewürztraminer, and this guy shows up and just drinks them all under the table.
He's drinking vanilla extract out of a cowboy boot.
he's wearing a cowboy. He's trying to give them all cowboy hats. Like they again, he brings them around by the end, but these are enormous conflicts with the IOC.
Just sort of putting you in a headlock until you agree to let Calgary host the Olympics.
But he also took credit for the building of a light rail system that, again, was just entirely built under Aldra, just happened to open under Klein. He did get to drive the inaugural train, but he sent it right through a red light, like right through a red signal. And everyone called it Little Ralphie's train. The other thing he does is he builds the Saddle Dome largely to clinch the Olympics. Because the Olympic Committee like looked at it and was like, yep, that shows commitment. We're going to do Calgary.
Yeah, the thing about having a stadium shaped like a saddle was not a bit. Calgary has one of those. Yeah.
The Scotiabank Saddle Dome herself.
Yeah.
She's beautiful.
But like with any Olympics, the building of the stadium basically involves destroying an entire neighborhood, much to the protest of its citizens. But this one...
You either die a kind of alcoholic sort of professional, like sort of indignation insurgent, or you live to see yourself become the mayor.
So, imagine being evicted for a big saddle.
Mm.
The indignity of it all.
Sorry, one sec. I'm just replying to a brief message saying, can't talk now.
You're just sort of like looking at the Saddle Dome thinking, I used to live there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and Riley's it's shaped being like a texted, saddle. Riley's being texted by a horse who's very upset we're talking about saddles this way.
It doesn't even look that much like a saddle.
Yeah.
No, if they had not called it a Saddle Dome, I would have not known that.
And what's worse, it doesn't even look like a saddle.
Big sort of collapsed plate of crepes.
Yeah. It was actually a memorial to Pardon My Garden. but the thing is, the neighborhood that Klein bulldozed to make this Saddle Dome didn't contain any bars that he liked. So in 1981, he asked the provincial government to basically take over the designated land to bypass any kind of appeals process entirely so he could just go ahead and do it. So he's like rarely used emergency powers, like just totally overrule everything.
Yeah, I want to use the like nuclear kind of continuity of government act to build the Saddle Dome.
Yeah, to build a sort of goofy that's the other thing. Every fucking stadium in Canada is a fucking novelty stadium. Like the Sky Dome, the Saddle Dome. We are not a serious place. Like he built a lot, he spent a lot. He inherits a booming economy largely because of oil, but oil's a harsh mistress. And also Canada goes into recession in 82. But Alberta had some oil and therefore money. And this is where he gets nationally famous. He's basically, at this point, 2,500 people a month are moving to Calgary. Housing's getting more and more expensive, and rising crime rates were being blamed on new arrivals from Eastern Canada.
My God, do I hear the Stan Rogers song, The Idiot Bass-Boosted Techno Remix?
Sam? Sam? Sam, you know what to do?
Sam?
I love that song.
And basically, Klein got up on stage and was just like, yeah, it's what's happening is all these bums and creeps from Eastern Canada are coming in and like, you know, committing all the crime.
Bums and creeps.
What I want is steaks and crepes. Yeah.
Your dad was a bum. I don't know if he was a creep, but he was literally. How quickly we forget. You know, it's like second generation immigrants being like, stop the boats.
Yeah. It's like, because Canada is so pernickety, this is genuinely a national scandal that like Klein was rude about people from Eastern Canada.
Yeah, it's sort of mayor of Calgary used the B word.
Yeah, I have a question.
Yeah, please.
Because I'm not Canadian. Uh-huh. And I know what the sort of like racial makeup of Canada is like now, but would you wager at the time that Calgary is perhaps a little whiter than Eastern Canada?
Weirdly, not not what Klein's talking about. He is actually talking about just like Torontonians. There's no sort of...
Sure.
As far as I'm aware...
Get this guy from Bad Cop, Bon Cop the hell out of my province.
This guy's from fucking Aurelia, so he can fuck
Cole
off.
Meany? Yeah. Like...
All right, if you're from fucking Saskatchewan, you can stay. But if you're from fucking Thunder Bay, you can fuck back off to Ontario, okay, bud? I do miss Canada sometimes.
Yeah. Rod Love is from Saskatchewan, by the way. I looked him up.
Oh, Saskatoon, you can fucking stay. So basically, like, this is such an only in Canada situation that, like, the mayor of Calgary being, like, a bit rude would cause, like, front page news.
Big spinning newspaper headlines.
Literally.
It even says a bit rude probably on the newspaper headline.
No, it's the Calgary Herald headline next morning was stay away, comma, bums told.
my favorite thing in here is where it says he called on Calgary police to use cowboy techniques, which is now a phrase that is entering my head directly from Hideo Kojima's, to remove them. Even if we have to put them all in jail on top of one another, we have to do it.
Yeah.
I love that.
You know the one kid that always shows up to school and he's wearing a cowboy hat because he's been going to the cowboy dojo? And he's like, don't make me use my cowboy techniques on you.
Yeah, actually,
just like a squad car drives past and lassoes you.
Yeah, honestly, I actually think that conscious country music is so important, like cowboy technique. Thank you.
Albertan Coke?
I'm just imagining a sort of like a cowboy Bushido sort of thing here. We're talking about cowboy tech, like a cowboy martial art that's been lost.
I was loitering by the Saddle Dome in preparation for the Olympics, and a Calgary police department officer hogtied me and threw me in front of a steam train.
Actually, did you know that cowboy technique, when they were both in high school, actually dropped the author of Galt, the musical about Alexander Galt, into a dumpster? Thank you. That
cowboy
was tortured.
Techniques.
Yeah.
Wow, that was a long one.
Calling on Calgary police to use their Deadeye meter to like remove.
Yeah,
we're gonna
fucking lasso all of them. We're gonna hogtie these fucking like Hamilton people who are coming in and taking the jobs.
Cowboy
Mel
techniques.
Lastman fired back at Klein, saying Ralph Klein is a bum who wouldn't make it as an alderman in Toronto.
That's such a Toronto burn. If you're like from Toronto, you're hurt hearing about that. You know?
Totally. Like, yeah. It's like, how dare you? We're the ones. We're downtown
you make
Canada.
There's an alderman around here.
Yeah, it's like, it feels like it's so stupid. I love it. Klein then clarified his remark, saying he doesn't think everyone from Eastern Canada is a bum or creep, but you're welcome to stay here a couple of weeks at government expense. But if you can't make it after a particular time, don't go out and rob our banks and our convenience stores and mug senior citizens and snatch purpose. Just get the hell out of town. And this is where he then, Nova, calls on Calgary police to use cowboy techniques to remove them. So Rod Love went into damage control mode, organizing an east-west fence mending tour. But where Klein, as Klein, basically went from town to town saying, I'm sorry you were offended, but I was right. This is again
I had to Google Calgary police to see what the vibe was, and they wear some of the most evil hats I've ever seen on a cop.
Let's take a look.
They're wearing like black cowboy hats with a red band curled up too far. Mm. It's deeply unsettling. This is like
a shot from a movie where they're inventing a new kind of like hyphen punk, but it's cowboy. Like it's like the future cowboy cyberpunk universe.
Yeah, and
this
then there's some photos of the like new chief of police in her dress uniform, and she looks like if they kept the Royal Ulster Constabulary and transported it into the Star Wars universe.
Wouldn't you know it, the Calgary police are considered some of the worst in the country.
This looks like if Hitler was a rancher.
Every single one of them looks more bald than I've ever seen a person who still has hair.
Yeah, this looks like what if Texas won World War II?
So So basically, this is from Don Martin. We're in Hamilton. Klein said, "Sure, I said you were bums and creeps, but that applied to people anywhere who rob banks and snatch purses and mug senior citizens. It just so happened that most of the robberies here last year were committed by recent arrivals." And weirdly, people kind of didn't, they liked it. With then all the way up to the Alberta Premier, Peter Lougheed, saying, "You know, we really did get the creeps and bums."
So it just works out like a kind of family argument.
Yeah, it actually was fine. And at the end of it, Klein said, "Everyone knows I have my sins. I eat too much, I drink, I gamble, and God forbid I hang out with my friends."
Is it so illegal to have friends? Your Honor.
Magnificent.
So basically, like, Calgarians, by the way, loved it. They reelected him again in 83, and again with 90% of the vote in 86.
He was the Lee Kuan Yew of Calgary.
Yeah, he is Lee Cowboy Yew.
It's crazy how if you try and chew gum in Calgary, a guy lassoes you.
And Ralph Klein calls you a bum. Anyway, also, by the way, the Saddle Dome is finished at this point at his second term. It's not without significant controversies and cost overruns, but it's done. But then he's like grappling with an economic downturn in Alberta. But in an interview with CBC, he said, "When times get tough in Calgary, life can be a little scary. But there's one thing for sure, it's always a hell of a ride." Ralph talks about people like, quote, "Old George" at the Queen's Hotel, another bar. Like, Calgary's a bit like Australia, where all like the bars are called hotel.
Yeah.
And describes how saving our city's heritage is how we got into politics. "The East End is where we took control of ourselves and our city. And now we have to hang on to what's important with us. Klein says it's where old and new live together, like the brand new art center, because even us cowboys like to hear a violin."
Oh, don't go sentimental on me, dude.
Yeah.
Ralph, don't get dark on me.
But like, he's got all kinds of crazy schemes to deal with the economic downturn that's happening in his second term.
I think my dad had the vinyl of "Even Us Cowboys Like to Hear a Violin." So
this is again from Martin. "He began to feel helpless as the economy tanked with little prospect of a short-term recovery, increasing his drinking dramatically. He would miss entire days of work without notifying the office. His weight soared. He felt restless. He needed a new challenge. And so soon after his re-election, he thought he'd found one on the menu of his favorite Chinese restaurant. Chatting up the owners, Klein discovered that all Chinatown duck meat was imported from outside the province. He found a farm that seemed perfect for raising ducks to supply Chinese restaurants in Calgary with fresh meat, and even hatched a scheme."
This is a magnificent thing, right? Because we live in the time of cocaine ideas. This is a drunk idea.
Yeah.
We barely still get drunk ideas.
Yeah, this is, I'm like going to be bad at being mayor because I'm busy working on a duck farm.
Yeah, it's so
because
good.
Because I was in a Chinese restaurant and I was like, "Hey, where'd you get the duck?"
So he even hatched a scheme to raise eels as a side operation.
We're doing total vertically integrated Chinese restaurant supply. I'm still mayor, by the way.
I'm sorry that I missed that city council meeting. I was working on my eel scheme.
I mean, I do have to say, I think this makes him a sort of two-time awardee of White Boy Who Can Hang, right?
Like, yeah, it's true.
To be getting into the Chinese restaurant supply business in the 70s.
To become the mayor of Eels while wearing your headdress that was gifted to you.
So, still in pursuit of political alternatives, he decided he abandoned these ideas because, well, of course he did. They're drunk. They're alcohol ideas.
Okay.
Waking up in a stupor, sort of like on your back, shoulder deep in an eel pond. Yeah.
Well, your doorbell rings and there's a guy holding a duck and he says, "Delivery. You're the sign for this duck."
And the great thing was, and this is when he was like still trying to like bark up this tree. He was like, "What if the city opened a pub featuring an all Alberta menu of beef and beer?" It was just
a drunk guy idea. There should be a pub that serves what I want right now.
Yeah, there should be a pub that serves what I want right now, and it should be from the town, so then everyone can be proud of the town.
This is in many ways the kind of like going shopping when you're hungry of alcoholism.
Yeah, all crazy. The alcoholic's idea is to open a bar and a late night food place. Whoa. So Rod Love scoured the city to find a location for the pub, but they never managed to open it. Crazy.
Do you know what people really, really want? Is they want chicken fingers, and they have to be from Banff. They have to be.
They want the Banff finger. So the other way he managed the downturn was...
I think his dad wrestled the bad finger in like 1936. No,
the other way he managed the downturn was borrowing to spend. He built, he spent, and he had a very Ralph Klein way of communicating it. The money he was proposing to spend at a new power generation station, for example, he sold as just one Bloody Mary per Calgarian.
Oh, that's a drinker's comparison in itself. Not to keep hammering on this guy is an alcoholic and governs the most like an alcoholic I've heard.
Yeah.
But like, not to be like, it's one drink, but like, it's one hangover cure. It's
like,
you know?
Just to not be like, oh, it's one cup of coffee a month. It's like, listen, it's simply just one of your beloved 50-50 martinis with a twist.
This is Oscar Goodman-esque.
Yeah.
He is like, I think Oscar Goodman and Ralph Klein are competing as the drunkest mayors.
Mm. Yes, yeah.
So, also at this time, by the way, the Lubicon Lake Cree Nation are talking about boycotting the Olympic Spirit Sings art exhibition sponsored by Shell, largely because Shell was drilling on their unceded land. Ralph's hard-charging pro-First Nation stance, strangely absent here.
He switched up on his day ones. He let the money change him.
Yeah, but the thing is, the Blackfoot that were behind him originally, they never left him.
I'm getting sort of a Killers of the Flower Moon vibe almost.
So in 1888, the Spirit Sings exhibition opens at the Glenbow Museum with Foreign Affairs Minister Joe Clark and Mayor Ralph Klein presiding over the official opening, displaying 650 pieces of First Nations art sponsored by Shell. Klein's response Klein's response to demonstrators at the opening was, "Let's all open this exhibition with a sense of pride and first and foremost enjoy this magnificent art on display."
You gotta compromise your principles to host the Olympics.
Yeah.
Just, God, it's just one of the most fucking wretched events.
Mm. Yeah.
So yeah, protesters were surveilled, like private security engaged in heavy-headed crackdowns, like it, everything you'd expect there to be, there was.
Sorry, and the Shell Corporation was behind this? That's strange.
And the IOC?
Lubicon land claims in the area remain unresolved as of the day of recording. Weird. Well, at the 88 Olympics, Klein was also an oaf.
It was his big day. He did all of this in order to host the Olympics, and then he oafs it up.
So famously, this is another sort of famous story, he mistakes the King of Norway for his driver and asks him to fetch the car. The startled king explained who he was as he pulled out a silver cigarette case. Mr. Klein apologized and asked for a cigarette.
Okay. Wait.
This rules.
This rocks. I'm sorry. I'm back on his side.
I'm back and forth on this guy in a lot of ways, but like, yeah, no. One of the better traits of North Americans in general, I feel, and it's something that Americans frequently let me down on, but when you have it, I like it when you have it, is a complete nonplussed disdain for monarchy. It doesn't mean anything to you.
It's demented. Who fucking cares? So like when other Americans are like, I like the royals, to me, I'm always like trying to not go completely insane at them because there is, I had that bone in me where I'm just like, there is the bone lodged. There's the American bone lodged in my brain where
at
anyone,
least,
you're like a king, like from Shrek, like a king.
I mean, the thing is, at least Americans who like, or North Americans, I should say, who like monarchs, like them as celebrities.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
Like, that's positive to me. But like, this is good to me to disrespect a king.
So yeah, this is after the Olympics when he's sort of succeeded. This is the height of his political life. And even says this in his biography again. The crowd reserved their loudest cheers for the guy who brought the games down from its modern Mount Olympus in Lausanne, Switzerland, and gave the people of Calgary a sports celebration to call their own. When a pudgy guy wearing a parka, a white Stetson, and an ear-to-ear grin entered the stadium, the decibels hit a new high as Klein exuberantly waved the Olympic flag he'd collected in Sarajevo 4 years earlier, now to be handed off to Nagano, Japan. He enjoyed what he still calls the highlight of his political life. He knew for a mere mayor, it would never get better than this.
A mere mayor.
That's beautiful. That is beautiful.
So, but the thing is, after this, he's so popular that he's courted by like every major party because he's not partisan, right? The liberals try to get him, the conservatives try to get him, and he ultimately goes to the conservatives.
He's like the Pope, you know?
Yeah, he's the Calgary Pope with a big Stetson. And it's as premier that he really, 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 really starts to suck much worse. Because like he does like to cut a budget, but he also, as mayor, he cuts budgets, but he builds stuff and he funds things. He's kind of all over the map politically as mayor, but as premier, he's really awful. like he introduces hyper-austerity. So this is from the Edmonton Journal. Klein said, "I'm very, very proud to announce that Alberta has slain its debt," said Klein, telling a cheering crowd while unveiling a giant sign that read "paid in full," which he did. He paid off Alberta's $23 billion national debt at a time of where repayments were not that big, interest rates on that debt. Most of that debt weren't that high. And all he had to do was destroy every single piece of public spending in Alberta.
Oh, yeah. Does Alberta spend anything on like social services or anything people might like need?
Nah.
Okay.
No. And okay. Also, by the way, it's not like Alberta then had no debt ever. Like Alberta has a relatively low debt to GDP ratio, but it still is like $85 billion worth of debt. Like all he did was eliminate the debt for a bit. Because then once you had to start doing social programs that were being rebuilt from nothing, that cost quite a bit more to do, right? It was ridiculous. Well,
we had to demolish the Alberta in order to save it.
Not quite. But by the way, this is obviously no gods, no mayors, not no gods, no premiers. So we're sort of glossing some of the highlights or lowlights of him as a premier.
Yeah, of course.
Also fittingly, this is from the Edmonton Journal. The event attracted a protester who heckled Klein, accusing the premier of balancing the books in the backs of the poor, saying, "Alberta is mean and cruel, and they have a war on the poor, and I'm sick of it as one person living in poverty. You had to make the people suffer to do it, and we're supposed to party with you." It's true, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, get his ass. Like, it's sort of like being sort of like visited by prophecy at that point, you know?
And you know what else? Is the other person who visited him was Canadian Prime Minister Jean Chrétien, who basically privately credited Klein for inspiring him to implement the Liberals' austerity program that more or less stayed in power, that more or less stayed with them to current day, right?
Oh, that's no good.
Yeah, but he did privatize liquor retailing and auto registration.
Well,
cool.
You want to get that move a little faster, yeah.
Yeah, everyone got a check for $400 in 2006. The other thing he did as a premier was he was so much worse as a drunk. This is a very famous story from him in Edmonton. Klein was on his way home Wednesday when he told his driver to stop at the Herb Jameson Center, a homeless shelter in downtown Edmonton. The premier got out of his car and began conversing with several residents. But within minutes, he was swearing and screaming, telling them to get jobs and throwing money at them. His speech was reportedly extremely slurred. Klein said, "Earlier in the evening, I had been at a private dinner, and yes, I had a few drinks. I don't deny that. But I want center residents and all Albertans to know that I will always strive to represent my office in this province with dignity and respect." Klein did not make an apology in person because he said he had too much back pain and he was in the hospital earlier that day. So,
Sorry, I was insane. My back hurt.
Yeah.
Actually, said, you know what?
To be fair, I buy that.
I was going to say, as a very tall person, with a lot of back pain. He's not wrong.
He said, "The purpose of my visit was to chat with residents and find out what their situations are like. During my time in politics, I've periodically made unscheduled visits because it gives me an opportunity to chat privately with people from different walks of life. I regret on this occasion that my visit was disruptive, and I intend to send them a personal letter of apology." The executive director of the shelter said the premier had, quote, "been in good spirits." I think he had intentions. It was a lively discussion, just got a bit out of hand. Klein, then again, after like, shouting at these like homeless guys and just throwing money at them, which I guess is one of his favorite things to do while drunk. Like Rob Ford left to throw business cards at you. Ralph Klein left to throw money at you.
It's just something, some kind of social contagion in Canada.
Well,
you
know? It's oafism. It's or in Quebec, l'oafisme.
Yeah. Is your child becoming an oaf? Look for the signs.
Look, money at you. lobbing money away. Out here. So, sorry, I'll get some better ones. Anyway.
Yeah, it's okay.
But like Klein was then praised by everybody after this. With Chrétien saying like, phoning him to congratulate him for having the courage to confront his demons in public. With Chrétien saying, "Keep your chin up, hang in there," and offering words of encouragement. And he got like calls.
We're all oafs here, friend.
He got calls from everyone being like, "You're so brave to be an alcoholic in public." And then he promised to stop drinking. .. on the job.
Oh, okay, sure. Not after work though, because his business.
This is a thing where people bemoan there's no class solidarity anymore, and it is. The oafs have it, just not you.
Yeah. And you know, like also the other thing he did is again he worked with the Chrétien government.
When you realize who's not allowed to like fire money at hobos.
So finally, the other thing is like under Klein, every oil sands project was given a stamp of approval without even being looked at.
Of course.
You know, like he had a Friends of Ralph, a three-prong fork was the Friends of Ralph Klein pin. Everybody in the oil industry had one. You know, he created the National Oil Sands Task Force with Chrétien, which introduced a tax write-off for capital investment in oil fields productions. Like, he did everything he could to get every single scrap of bitumen out of those sands and turn Alberta into like a fucking hellscape.
Yeah, it looks like the moon.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. And also like, yeah, and also like the most accursed culture on earth.
Just yeah, 100%.
Being like, fester there.
Like Ralph Klein was the guy who was the pivot point for Alberta being what, if it wasn't him, it would have been someone else, but he was the pivot right. for how it went specifically. And he was mayor. Mm-hmm. He was mayor of Calgary. Anyway, well, anyway, we have a Q&A to record. So I think that's all the Klein that I'm going to put in the bottle today. But this was my mayor.
A brutal sort of like descent, really.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Horrible.
This guy however, used to be fun and then he's not fun anymore.
Yeah, he used to be fun and now he sucks.
However, I just dropped in the chat what will be the episode art, which is his picture from his obituary.
That's him. That's yep. fucking him.
Yep, okay. He's back to being funny again.
Back to being cool. So every time you're listening to this episode, listener, and you feel a little bit sad, just pull up your device again and look at the photo I've uploaded.
Yeah, look at the photo of this big oaf. Anyway, that's Ralph Klein. Thank you very much for listening to my mayor.
Thank you.
And once again, thank you very much for the last mayor episode of 2025.
Yeah, the last free episode. And there's next week on the Patreon, which will drop on the first of the year, I believe. Is that 1 week after Christmas? Am I crazy? I think so. Yes, the first of the year. Will be a Q&A episode that we're about to record where we are A-ing some Q's from the patrons on the Patreon, which you can go to noguysnomayors.com. $5 a month, twice as many episodes of this beautiful show.
That's right. Wow. And if you have an idea for a question, too late. We've already got all the questions. So hold it for the next time we have to take some time off.
Yeah, just hold it. Just hold
or
it.
Or build a time machine and get it to us last week.
Yeah, maybe someone did. Maybe some of the questions
maybe
were that.
Maybe some are already done.
Okay, bye everybody. Bye.
Bye.